Welcome back to the Crypto Daily. The Bitcoin world is abuzz again with another claim to the Satoshi Nakamoto identity, and yet again, it seems to be a bust.
It's a bit like a recurring Bitcoin fever dream, isn't it? Every few years, someone pops up claiming to be the elusive creator, only to fall flat on their face when asked for proof. This latest episode with Stephen Mala demanding payment for proof is particularly farcical.
The audacity of charging for a reveal is certainly a new low. It really underscores the circus-like atmosphere surrounding the Satoshi hunt. But why this enduring fascination? Is it purely about the fortune in Bitcoin attributed to Satoshi, or is there something more?
I think it's a combination of factors. The wealth is a huge draw, no doubt. Imagine the power of controlling that much Bitcoin. But it's also about the mystique. Satoshi created something revolutionary, then vanished. It's a story that fuels speculation and conspiracy theories. People crave a face to put to the name, a narrative to complete the puzzle.
And the implications for the crypto world are significant. A real Satoshi could heavily influence the market, potentially manipulating Bitcoin's value. Their opinions on future developments, on regulation, would carry immense weight.
Absolutely, which is perhaps why some prefer the mystery to remain unsolved. The decentralized nature of Bitcoin is arguably strengthened by Satoshi's absence. No single entity to control or manipulate it, just the code and the community.
But the lack of transparency also raises concerns. Who is holding all that Bitcoin? What are their intentions? It's a question that regulators are increasingly asking, and this latest charade only adds fuel to the fire.
Indeed. The irony is that this pursuit of Satoshi might ultimately be detrimental to the very thing he, she, or they created. The more we focus on the individual, the less we focus on the technology and its potential. Perhaps it's time we accept that Satoshi is a ghost, a legend, and move on.
Shifting gears from the Satoshi mystery, let's talk about altcoins, specifically XRP. It's been making headlines recently, with its legal battles seemingly behind it. Is it a worthwhile investment compared to Bitcoin?
That's a complex question. While Bitcoin is the established giant, XRP offers a different value proposition. It's designed for faster, cheaper transactions, targeting the financial sector. The SEC lawsuit was a major setback, but the recent ruling in Ripple's favor has certainly renewed interest.
But does it have the same potential for growth as Bitcoin? Bitcoin's early adopters saw incredible returns. Can XRP replicate that?
It's unlikely to see those same astronomical gains. Bitcoin was a first mover, capturing the initial wave of crypto adoption. XRP enters a much more crowded market. However, its focus on real-world financial applications could drive significant growth, especially if institutional adoption increases.
Some argue that XRP's pre-mined supply and lack of smart contract functionality limit its potential. What's your take?
Those are valid concerns. The fixed supply can be seen as both a positive and a negative. It eliminates the inflationary aspect of Bitcoin, but also limits scarcity. The lack of native smart contracts is being addressed with sidechains, but it remains to be seen how effective that will be. Ultimately, XRP's success hinges on Ripple's ability to secure partnerships and integrate its technology into the global financial system.
So a cautious optimism, not a Bitcoin replacement, but a potential player in the crypto space.
Precisely. It's not an either-or situation. A diversified crypto portfolio could include both Bitcoin and XRP, each serving different purposes and offering different levels of risk and reward.
Larry Fink's endorsement of Bitcoin as digital gold is quite the statement. Do you think this legitimizes Bitcoin as a safe haven asset, Florian?
Absolutely. Fink's shift from skepticism to endorsement speaks volumes. It signals growing institutional acceptance of Bitcoin as a viable alternative to gold. This isn't just a fringe movement anymore.
But Bitcoin's price is notoriously volatile. How can it be a safe haven if it swings so wildly?
Gold isn't immune to volatility either. While Bitcoin's swings are more dramatic in the short term, its long-term trajectory has been consistently upward. It's a generational play, not a get-rich-quick scheme.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Fink's comparison, especially considering the upcoming election?
I agree with Florian. It validates Bitcoin's growing maturity. As for the election, I think the impact will be less than people anticipate. Crypto and precious metals are global assets, driven by larger macroeconomic forces than domestic politics.
So both of you seem to agree that Bitcoin and gold have a place in a diversified portfolio, regardless of the election outcome.
Exactly. Diversification is key. Gold offers a hedge against inflation and geopolitical uncertainty, while Bitcoin offers exposure to the burgeoning digital economy. They complement each other.
What about other cryptocurrencies? Are they worth considering?
While there's potential in some altcoins, Bitcoin remains the king. It's the most established, most secure, and has the largest network effect. Other cryptos should be approached with caution and a clear understanding of the risks involved.
Excellent points. Thanks for sharing your insights, gentlemen. Moving on from Bitcoin, let's talk about a new cryptocurrency that's generating buzz, the WLFI, launched by former President Trump's new exchange, World Liberty Financial. It's touted as a stablecoin pegged to the US dollar. What are your thoughts?
Stablecoins can be a mixed bag. While the dollar peg is meant to reduce volatility, it relies heavily on the issuer's reserves. With WLFI, the question is, can we trust World Liberty Financial to maintain adequate reserves? It's a new entity, and its long-term stability is unknown. Plus, even if it's pegged to the dollar, that doesn't eliminate all risks. The dollar itself can fluctuate, impacting WLFI's purchasing power.
So you're saying it's essential to look beyond the marketing and assess the underlying financial stability of the issuer.
Precisely. And with any new cryptocurrency, a healthy dose of skepticism is warranted. Just because it has a big name attached doesn't guarantee success. Remember, a stablecoin's value is tied to the issuer's ability to honor that peg. It's a trust game, and in the crypto world, trust needs to be earned.
The crypto market's buzzing with TradFi integration. Visa and Coinbase partnering, PayPal embracing crypto payments. It's a sign of growing acceptance. But how do we balance this mainstreaming with the need for regulatory clarity and the innovative spirit that drives crypto?
It's a tightrope walk. This TradFi adoption offers legitimacy and broader access, which is crucial for mass adoption. However, relying too heavily on established players could stifle the very disruption crypto represents. Imagine a future where crypto innovation is dictated by the risk appetite of traditional banks. Not exactly the decentralized dream, is it?
Exactly. And then there's the regulatory landscape. A pro-crypto Congress sounds promising, but regulation often favors incumbents. Can smaller, innovative crypto firms compete with the lobbying power of financial giants?
That's the challenge. Policymakers need to balance protecting consumers with fostering innovation. Heavy-handed regulation could crush the agility that makes crypto so dynamic. It's about finding a middle ground that allows the industry to flourish while mitigating risks.
So the question becomes, can crypto retain its disruptive edge while integrating with the very system it aims to revolutionize? It's a fascinating paradox.
Indeed. The next few years will be critical. Will crypto be absorbed by the traditional financial system, or will it reshape it? The answer, I suspect, lies in finding that delicate balance.
Shifting gears, the crypto world is facing another escalating threat, ransomware, specifically from groups like Black Cat. These attacks aren't just hitting major corporations. Individual investors are also increasingly vulnerable.
Black Cat is particularly concerning. They're leveraging the anonymity and cross-border ease of crypto to demand ransoms, making tracing and recovery incredibly difficult. And their tactics are evolving. Double extortion, where they threaten to release sensitive data, adds another layer of pressure on victims.
The Chainalysis report highlighted this trend. Millions in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are being demanded. What's the industry doing to fight back against these increasingly sophisticated attacks?
It's a multi-pronged challenge. Improving security protocols is crucial, but education is equally important. Users need to understand the risks and practice safe crypto management. And of course, stronger international collaboration is needed to track and prosecute these criminals. The decentralized nature of crypto makes jurisdiction a complex issue.
So it's a race against time. As the crypto space grows, so too do the incentives for these bad actors. The question is, can the industry develop robust enough defenses to stay ahead of the curve?
It has to. The future of crypto depends on it. If we can't secure the ecosystem, mass adoption will remain a distant dream. The irony is that the very features that make crypto attractive, its decentralization and anonymity, are also being exploited by criminals. We need to find a way to maintain those benefits while mitigating the risks.
Let's shift gears and talk about Dogecoin mining. It's interesting how this meme coin has evolved and now has a dedicated mining community. What's the current state of Dogecoin mining?
It's become quite sophisticated, actually. While it started with CPU mining, the increasing difficulty now requires specialized ASIC miners or high-end GPUs for profitable operations. The script algorithm, which Dogecoin uses, favors memory-intensive hardware, unlike Bitcoin's SHA-256, which is more processor-focused.
So the hardware landscape is different. What about the economics? Is it still profitable to mine Dogecoin?
Profitability depends on several factors: hardware costs, electricity prices, the current price of Doge, and of course, network difficulty. Merged mining with Litecoin can improve returns, as both use script. But with Doge's unlimited supply and the volatility of the crypto market, it's a riskier venture compared to mining Bitcoin, which has a limited supply.
That's a crucial point. The unlimited supply poses a different set of economic incentives for miners. What about mining pools? Are they as prevalent in Dogecoin mining as they are in Bitcoin?
Absolutely. Pools are essential for most Dogecoin miners, offering a more consistent revenue stream compared to solo mining. They share the rewards proportionally based on the hash rate contributed by each member. Choosing the right pool with low fees and servers close to your location is important for maximizing profits.
So, it's a complex calculation. It's not just about plugging in a computer and watching the Doge roll in. There's strategy involved, from hardware selection to pool choice and managing operating costs.
Precisely. And let's not forget the environmental impact. The energy consumption of mining, especially with less efficient hardware, is a growing concern. The Dogecoin community needs to address this issue for long-term sustainability.
So we've talked about crypto payments, but this article paints Web3 wallets as more than just a payment method. It's the bridge between Web2 and Web3, the spark of creation, if you will, referencing Michelangelo's famous fresco. What are your thoughts on this, David?
I think the analogy is apt. A wallet is a gateway to a whole ecosystem of decentralized applications, digital identity, and new possibilities. It's like comparing dial-up internet to broadband. It's not just about speed, it's about access to a different dimension of functionality.
The article argues that even businesses outside the crypto space should integrate Web3 wallets. It mentions benefits like streamlined user authentication, loyalty programs, and even peer-to-peer marketplaces. It seems counterintuitive, almost like future-proofing by embracing potential disruption. Is this a sound strategy?
Absolutely. Think of it as laying the groundwork for the future. It's not about going all in on crypto, but about having the infrastructure in place to adapt and evolve. The article points out that a significant number of businesses are already accepting crypto payments, indicating a shift in the landscape. Those who don't adapt risk being left behind.
It's a bold claim that companies without crypto wallets will be left behind. Is that hyperbole, or is there real weight to that statement?
I think there's significant weight to it. We're seeing a convergence of technologies, and the lines between Web2 and Web3 are blurring. A Web3 wallet is a strategic tool, not just a payment option. It's about access, control, and participation in the evolving digital world. Companies that ignore this shift risk losing their competitive edge.
Let's dive into some major developments this week. Michael Saylor sharing a fabricated Trump quote about Bitcoin being money is quite a headline.
It's a stark reminder of how misinformation spreads, especially during politically charged periods. Saylor's reach amplifies the impact, regardless of intent. It underscores the need for critical thinking and source verification, even for prominent figures.
Indeed. Then there's Kraken restructuring with a new co-CEO and reported layoffs. A new day, they call it, while streamlining their structure and aiming for a leaner operation.
It's a common narrative in the crypto space. Adapting to market conditions, often involving difficult decisions. Kraken's emphasis on removing organizational layers suggests a move towards greater agility and efficiency. The crypto market is volatile, and companies need to be nimble to survive.
It's a balancing act, staying lean while maintaining stability. Finally, the sentencing of Nishad Singh, former FTX engineering director, adds another chapter to that ongoing saga.
Singh's sentencing, while significant, is just one piece of the puzzle. The complexities of the FTX case continue to unfold, and the repercussions will likely be felt for quite some time. It serves as a cautionary tale about the importance of robust regulatory frameworks in the crypto space.
So Binance's listing fees are back in the spotlight. Moonrock Capital's CEO claimed Binance demanded 15% of a project's token supply for a listing, sparking a debate about CX listing practices.
Binance co-founder Yi He denied the claims, reiterating their transparent policy where projects propose a donation, not a fixed fee. It does raise eyebrows, though, especially with decentralized exchanges gaining traction.
Exactly. CC data shows declining trading volume on major CEXs like Binance, Coinbase, and others. Some attribute this to geopolitical tensions, the US elections, but the rise of DEX is a significant factor.
The irony is palpable. Scroll, an Ethereum Layer 2 scaling solution, listing on Binance was met with criticism, seen as compromising its decentralized ethos. It fuels the argument against CXs and their perceived influence.
It's a complex landscape. CXs offer liquidity and accessibility, while DEXs champion decentralization. The future likely lies in a balance, but this tension will continue to shape the crypto space. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us on the Crypto Daily Show.